Gavin.
Hi.
Hi, we're doing a wonderful series on math and music. And in a way, by what you found in Tetrionics, I find I need to rethink quite a bit. You already said that music was a new territory for you. And with the help of what Henk Kooi has already told and added and explained, you realize that in music there is something peculiar going on, which is that they use a musical scale system, which could be 5 notes, 8 notes, 12 notes, how many notes you seem to want to have. And we explored how we can understand that connection of the notation of music to the aim of math and music, which is to understand how cell cycles connect. And in your earlier work in math and music, you've provided some wonderful images which show how, from the point of view of tetrionics, it would be possible to look at that. And how you juxtaposed that there will be circular or cyclic processes, which is like the note which is maintained, sustained. And of course I recognize that that would be equivalent to a cell cycle which continues, or the state of health. And you also said, well, there's this other form in which we're dealing with spirals, and there again I reflected, well, that is what we seem to see in spirals, such as in cells growing or decay, in the general principles of disease. And in the previous session, that led us to a very peculiar kind of thought, which was that apparently in music we are dealing with two systems, one which is circular, one which is spiral, and one which seemed to relate to the concentric rings, which we could compare to the ladders of the octave. You have a note and then you have a frequency doubling, and so on. And that of course is very precisely measured, but there is also another way to do that, which in music they would call the quints, and that is where you then have 5 steps or 5 notes in an octave to go from one octave to the other, which would be the pentatonal system.
Okay.
It led us to the realization that there must be something where we can then connect these octaves, which then came into the picture as a kind of straightforward ladder, but also the pentatonic system, which then came into the picture as a spiral staircase. So in a metaphor, we have a ladder and a spiral staircase, and that would be the equivalent of what you had shown in the pictures as the circles and the spirals. And then at the end of the last session of math and music, we were looking into the notion that, well, perhaps that's what then was addressed with the so-called Pythagorean comma, which seems to be a musical understanding that it is necessary to connect the ladder with the spiral staircase, but also that it connects our personal involvement to the outsider view. We realize that there is something about the subjective and the objective connected, and in music Henk Kooi has brought that out very nicely. Bach and others were trying to resolve why the notes going up seem to be different than the notes going down, and from the point of view of math and music, that would be based on the fact that in music we are actually feeling it. So when the music goes down, we experience as a Doppler shift downward, or a deceleration, or a loss of power, while the other way around, when the music goes up, we experience it as an elation rather than a depression, and an increase of power. And that's where you then said, well, that's where at the level of the energies in tetrionics, the energy momenta, There is a possibility to relate the circles to the spirals. By the way, the quanta in tetrionics can form explosions and implosions, which would be the patterns of disease. But then you said in tetrionics that is also related to the understanding of spirals, expanding and contracting spirals. And what we find in the body is that there is always this balance between expansion and contraction to create a continuity of the circle. In fact, at some point in my engineer school training, I learned that a circle is in fact the balance between an outgoing and ingoing spiral. Like, you can only walk straight when with your left foot and your right foot you make sure that the spirals which you would trace on either side actually are in balance. So that gives us a very interesting connection point where the Pythagorean comma seems to be the musical equivalent of the tuning which happens inside the cells, by which the cells and the organs and the bodies can maintain their balance in the environment depending on the energy level. So when the energy level seems to decrease, that might be a signal, a warning for the system, known as depression. When the energy levels increase, that might be a boost for the system, known as elation. And that's where you then say, in tetrionics, with the linear momenta and this understanding of spirals, we might be able to get that somewhere. So that puts us at essentially the core of health and disease, formulated in the relationship between the circles and the spirals, as you have now been able to depict that in the formalism and the representations of tetrionics. And that is where at the previous session we ended with the idea, well, maybe next time we can then go into the correlation between these spirals and the energy levels.
Certainly, they all interplay. They're all connected, geometrically and otherwise. Mathematically, as the mathematicians will have you believe. But in reality, it's all just geometry tying it together. As you say, with the ascending and descending scales or intervals, however you want to term it, remembering that I'm also learning and trying to remember all these terms as I go. Yeah. With the ascending and descending, the ladders, as you say, I can easily show how that all relates back to, and I do it in the mathematics book. I've yet to draw up the illustrations for Mathemusics, but it's there as a reminder. I just haven't gotten to it yet. The ascending, descending, they're shown to be mathematically or energy-wise just a converging or diverging energy series. You're either adding energy or you're releasing energy from the series. And that ties back in with our discussions the other day of spectral lines, which is where we got to with all the different ratios. So if we use the work from the other day where we have the harmonic triangle, the differential triangles is probably the better wording for it.
Yes.
With the differentials, we end up with all these different ratios. And not uncoincidentally, music has a whole series of different ratios between the notes, which is where that illustration was leading. The next thing I have to do with those illustrations is obviously give it the specific numbers or wavelengths, frequencies, for musical tones, and then work out where those ratios sit. The one that jumps out to me at the moment, and it's only because somebody else who's more familiar with music came along and saw one of my illustrations, the one I term learning to count. And in the learning to count triangle, which is just a 100 quanta triangle, 10 squared, I'll send through an illustration on that, but everyone knows where to find it by now. When you look at that, if you look at the ratios, the differentials between energy level 9 and energy level 1, that is to say 81 quanta versus 1 quanta, and you compare the energy that has to be released to have that transition. Now, that's also listed, all the maths for it, all the discussions on it are listed as an unnamed spectral series. I might even call it the chromatic spectral line or something like that to tie it back in with the music theory side of things. But the interesting thing about the ratio of jumping from energy level 9 to energy level 1 is you end up with this fantastic little number along the linear momentum, the bisector line, those series of photons or bosons right through the center of the triangle. And the number you end up with is 0, strap yourself in for this, 0.98765432 1. I loved it because when you draw it that way, you then have odd numbers on the transverse measurements. You have squared numbers on the right-hand side of the triangle. You have a series of integers from 0 through to 1, or 0, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, running up the center of the triangle. You can color code it however you want to make the point of the distribution of the energy momenta, which we discussed last night. And at the base of the triangle, you can either have a normal distribution of numbers, which is where the statistics of quantum mechanics comes from, or if you number each quanta, you can end up with a normal distribution of triangular numbers. And they just appear. They come out of the geometry. Not because of the math. The math just gives us numerical values. The geometry is what combines all those relationships, odds summing to squares, even numbers being a normal distribution, triangular numbers, squared numbers, square roots, halves, wholes, integers, all that sort of stuff, odds and evens. All that is in one illustration. It's a fantastic illustration, and I call it the learning to count because it's the basics of how mathematics has to change. But the real interesting part about it is that central number, not 0.98765432 1, which is the ratio of 80 to 81. And that's what I'm saying there is it's the energy that's, it's the amount of energy. If you took 81 as being the unity number, the total energy, and you wanted to get rid of a percentage of that number, of that unity one, to get to a single quantum, you would get rid of 0.98765432 1 percent of, or 98.765432 1% of that integer amount. It's a transition. It's shown up. It shows up in spectral lines. It's not known because Rydberg, believe it or not, again, the mathematicians that devised Rydberg's formula and the spectral physicists that have played around with it ever since it was established have never gone to energy level 9. It's not necessary for elements, technically speaking, but that transition gives us all our math. So the striking thing about that, which was given to me by another person whose leaning was musical, not physical, was when he saw that number, he said, that's the Pythagorean comma. And I went looking for it. It turns out it's not the Pythagorean comma. It's a thing called the syntotic comma. And there's a difference between them, and it spins my brain every time I read an article about the syntotic comma and the Pythagorean comma, etc. But just from, say, Wikipedia, just to add it to the discussion, the Pythagorean tuning, and this is a direct quote, uses justly tuned fifths, 3 to 2, but also uses the relatively complex ratio of 81 to 64ths for major thirds, whereas the syntonic, when I've got to find the right bit, it does say where it is a small comma type interval between two musical notes. equal to the frequency ratio of 81 to 80. There you go. It's the inverse of it, but it's the same thing. It's descending instead of ascending when you invert it. That's all that's changing. Or around, and I don't understand this, 21.51 cents. It must mean something to a musical person. It means nothing to me. But we've done the differentials. We can see in that differential diagram and in the learning to count diagram that this ratio of 81 to 80 exists. So the syntonic comma is a natural transition between energy level 9 and 1, or between whatever musical note that works. I haven't got my pictures in front of me. Whatever musical note that works out to be. Just bear with me while I find it, because it's worth stating for the record in this discussion. I just have to bring up my Mathemusics work. It would be musical notes. It would be number 9, looks like an A. So going from A to C in musical notes is the syntonic comma. Whatever that really means musically, I'm not au fait with it, but I know that the mathematics gives it this value, and it gives it this value because of the ratio. And we've already done the work on all these different ratios that tetrionics gives to the chromatic scale. We did that back in the, I think it was the last discussion we had.
Yeah, and that's why we have this wonderful connection.
Spectral lines and musical notes.
Exactly. And that's where the atomic energies and the musical system were now totally connected in principle.
Yeah.
Which brought us to this possibility for the attuning.
Yeah, so if you wanna bring the ascending and descending ladders into the differentials, you can see the connection. The connection's the geometry again, as it always was. We have an equilateral geometry that forms this picture, a perspective of a road leading down, a rainbow-coloured road, the same one that's in Thor's homeworld. So you've got this rainbow colour, this spectral lines running down this pathway or this ladder that's converging towards a point. As it converges, the notes get shorter, or the wavelengths get shorter, etc. Or if you travel the other way, towards the base, that geometry keeps expanding outwards. So it keeps diverging. Whether it's converging or diverging is simply with respect to which direction you're looking or traveling along that ladder or that roadway. So that geometry gives us ascending and descending intervals or scales. And the difference between one spot on that ladder, or one rung on the ladder, one colour, and the next colour, or one note and the next note, in either direction, are these ratios that we've already discussed and drawn up with the differentials. When you calculate the differentials, you get all these jumping from one squared number to another, or one note to another, gives us all these differential ratios. Now we can express them as a number, 0.9876, etc., or we can express it as a ratio between the energy levels or the colours or the notes. They all tie together, in which case it's just a simple 81 to 80 ratio. Or if you're going the opposite direction, it'd be 80 to 81. And that's all you're doing. So we've now geometrically brought in ascending, descending scales. We've brought in the transitions, the commas. We've brought in the all the different ratios that appear. Now, of note is the fact that when you look at the musical ratios that come out, there's ratios jumping out everywhere. The ones that are of real use, that are easy to work with in tetrionics, are the ones that involve squared numbers. So if you've got ratio of two squared numbers, or any one of the ratio numbers in the ratios is a squared number, you can then start looking at the geometry and make a quick connection. But the next step of my work in Tetrionics is what I've just explained, is to put that into an illustrate or into a series of illustrations that'll expand the Tetrionics work again. So how does that relate? We've done the ascending and descending and the comma, and we've now introduced the differentials, as I call them, the ratios between the notes, which are the same for spectral lines. We're just talking about changes of energy momenta, after all, except we've got this Apollo ratio, which is the ratio between spectral lines. Frequency wavelength is related to the speed of light, whereas musical note frequency wavelengths are related to the speed of sound. So we introduce this constant, which is the constant. Whenever you see a constant, the constant just screams to me that there's a geometry involved. Planck's constant is a triangle. The K constant in Coulomb's law of attraction is two triangles overlapped. Same thing with Newton's gravitational constant, two triangles overlapped. So if you see a constant, you know geometry is involved, because it's geometry that gives the scaling, the constant scaling, because it's a constant geometry. So how do we relate those ascending and descending energy levels to spirals? Because often, instead of ladders converging, diverging harmonic series or notes and mathematics, often you'll see that those things are expressed as a spiral, because it's natural to draw it. As the values change or the energy level decreases, you have a convergent spiral traveling in towards a point. If you increase the energy levels that you're measuring, and over time they get larger and larger, you develop a divergent spiral or an explosion of energy. And as Otto pointed out, whether it's ascending or descending has a distinct different effect on our bodies and our perception of music, whereas it doesn't have that same sort of effect in physics. We have redshift and blueshift, but it doesn't have an emotional impact like ascending or descending musical notes does. Previously, in one of the lectures, I introduced the implosion explosion illustration, where we had six triangles of energy pointing inward for implosions, and six triangles of energy pointing outwards. And I said the best thing to do is to print that page and to cut out the triangles, cut along the linear momentum lines of force radiating outwards, and slide those triangles in. Because what the mathematics of physics, what calculus, etc., misses out on is that when they draw the linear momentum of the force vectors, what they're missing in the two-dimensional graphing and drawing of those lines is the fact that everywhere you have one of those pink arrows, you have a scalar triangle of energy at 90 degrees. It's having said it, I'm sure it's gone over most people's heads, but if you build those models, you'll suddenly understand what it is I'm talking about. For this discussion, I created some new ones based on our last night's discussion. And the new ones differ only from the previous illustration. I've sent the illustration through, so they'll be attached to the discussion. The difference between these illustrations and the ones we used when we first introduced the model is that in these two, or in this illustration, these illustrations, we have two circles. One, instead of having a scalar electromagnetic field, I've color-coded them for quantum levels, transverse energy momenta, or I've color-coded the bosons in the scalar field, whereas the original one was just a color-coded for electric and magnetic fields. This one, the first one of the series, is color-coded for the bosons, the quantum levels of the energy. And the second one is color-coded for the longitudinal energy momenta, the photons within the field. There's no difference between the two, except one is a ratio of 2 to 1, two bosons for every photon, H nu versus HF. And that's another discussion entirely, and we've had it a few times. But by color coding, when you build the models, you can begin to see how these changing energy levels, the ascending and descending ladders, how the changing differentials, the increasing and releasing of energies from squared energy levels, creates this changing energy momenta, the spirals. Just to quickly explain it, in order to, as shown in the illustrations for the music, math and musics, if you have a constant note that doesn't vary in energy or wavelength or frequency, so it's a constant steady note, no change, and you measure that note from all angles over time, you'll draw a circle. So an unchanging energy system, doesn't matter whether it's convergent or divergent, is represented by a circle. And a circle is what you'll draw, because everywhere along that circle, when you measure the force that the musical instrument's applying or creating, you'll measure the same strength at that point all around that circle. So that's a circular form. It's a constant tone or note. If the note varies, you're obviously changing the energy that the musical instruments are outputting. So if it's outputting more energy, that circular form will start to expand. Now, over time, it doesn't just jump from one circle to the next. It works its way out as a spiral over time. You might go from one note as a circle to another note that's larger, but to go from one to the other, you have to spiral out to it. And conversely, to go back, you have to spiral backwards. These are the implosions, explosions. But the changes, and this is the important point, and this is where the model becomes crucial. If you make the model and you look at it with the radiant, with the triangles pointing outwards, and in particular the boson one, the first one of the series, you'll see the color coding. You'll see that closest to the source point, you have the fuchsia bosons. They're the ones with the largest number of quanta in their geometry. H nu is the greatest. The weakest H nu, the smallest, which is just one Planck quantum, is the red one, right out at the edge, which means that from the center, the field, the force or the musical note or the energy is strongest, closest to the source. And as you move away, it gets weaker, which is the inverse squared law, usually. It does change on occasions, depending what you're measuring too. But if you measure the linear momentum, the pink arrows, which is, if you make the model, you'll see it lines up with the center of the triangles. So those pink arrows line up as the center. They're all integer numbers. So 1 squared is 1, 2 squared is 4, etc. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 is the values for the linear momentum, integer numbers. So, for example, if we wanted to have a musical note change from, say, let me get my illustrations back up. Not that one. If we wanted to change... Of course it wants to have a think about it. I just have to find the right illustration. Because I'd rather use the musical notes instead of the numbers. Why can't I find it?
Well, look for that. Let me just put the connection in.
There it is.
Because you're talking about the energies and the pressures of the music. And all of this can now be really connected to physics. And the most important change is that in physics it always refers to zero. And in music it refers to the already existing energy level or musical note, which is called the ground note in the musical compositions. So we are really now getting a translation, a transcription, a reinterpretation of physics and music, in which music is, let's call it, the involved form of physics, and physics is the uninvolved form of music.
Mm-hmm.
And so, by the translation which you're now giving in terms of tetrionics, music can indeed now be connected to both the subjective experience of making music, singing, feeling what happens in the body, where it interacts with all these body frequencies, which is the core of Mather Music. But on the other hand, we can also sing outside and have the notes come out, have the tones combine in orchestras and choirs, which in a way connects it to the mathematical aspect of music. So we're now really bridging between the inside and the outside, in the same way that there is this bridging emerging between health and disease. In the meanwhile, did you find your picture?
Yeah, I did. I mean, I just needed to keep my own terminology straight for everyone else that is familiar with music, unlike myself. The point I'm about to make is if you're holding up the boson one and you've made that model with all the scalar fields with their quantum levels color-coded pointing outwards, if, for example, you were started at a G note, which is a blue color, you could then mark all the blues or all the G notes around that circle, around that hexagon, around the source point as they're presented in the model, and you'd find they make a circle. Similarly, every note, a D note would make a circle, but it would be larger and further out, and the C would be further out again. It'd actually be at the edge where the hexagon is. And of course, it's a hexagon there in the model for simplicity. But if you, and we've got six radiating fields, but if you had 360 radiating fields, it wouldn't be a hexagon, it'd be a circle. It's just the geometry that comes out. So simplicity makes it the way it is. But the point I'm making is to transition from a blue energy level to, say, a yellow energy level, you can't jump like you do in quantum mechanics. You have to increase the note by adding energy. So as you add or release energy from the center, you're changing the number of triangles within those scalar fields. And as you're measuring the linear momentum in line with the amount of energy in those fields, because the linear momentum is the square root of the scalar fields. So as you release energy, it adds energy to those radiant fields. The force that you're measuring is proportional to that energy, it's the square root of it. So as the energy is added, that force increases, and that gives you the spiral, because as you're measuring that force increase, the spiral is getting bigger. And conversely, if you wanted to release energy, the energy is released from the equilateral triangles, so the force exerted becomes less, so it decreases back down, the spiral converges inwards, spirals inwards. Either way, the transitions are exactly still based on these triangles again. So where we perceive a force change to create a spiral that goes from, say, an A note to a D note, in fact, all we're doing with tetrionic modeling is saying, well, we're adding more triangles to that energy, and that energy has a square root linear momentum, creates more force. By creating more force in the same space, we're shortening the wavelength of the note, because there's more quanta. Frequency increases, wavelength decreases. It's all related to the energy. Again, this energy produces the speed of sound, not the speed of light. But the ratios between these energy levels can still be drawn geometrically, and they still produce the ratios we just spoke about with the Pythagorean, the syntonic commas, etc. They all start to flow out of that geometry as an expression of changing energy levels. And when the energy level changes, we measure that indirectly via a changing force that's applied, or a changing wavelength of the note. Now that's where the second set of illustration comes in, because the second set of illustrations are exactly the same scalar triangles. So you can take out the quantum levels of bosons, put in identical triangles, but this time we're measuring the photons. And we measure the photons because the photons are the radiant part. The bosons hold the energy momenta charge. They're the charge carriers. The photons are the radiant energy momenta. They produce the force radiating outwards. And you can see that easily when you look at the color coding. Because you'll see in the second set of triangles, the color coding produces this pink linear momentum set of triangles right down the center. So you can see the linear momentum, the force vector, for each of these triangles. And you can also see from the color coding that as you move away from the center of the triangle, away from the mean distribution of energy, it drops off. The energy drops off till it becomes zero, which is what we experience. Fair enough, it looks like a diamond-shaped field, but in reality, what we measure is a rounded, generalized, ideal version, particularly when we start graphing the values. We're never precise. So what's physically a diamond-shaped field?